Want to get yourself adjusted, bring that in a little closer. All right. So we're recording.
Okay. So I was doing 8 a month, 2 every week, until I had an extraordinary opportunity, which was to buy an existing magazine for the field.
Right.
Right. And I chose to do that. And now my field expanded. Well, not at first, but it did expand so that I was...
So what was the name of that magazine? You don't remember.
I'll think of it.
Okay. But was that a statewide magazine?
Well, it was... It went all over the state.
Right.
In fact, it went to Washington, Oregon, and even Texas.
Oh, okay.
So I was expanding pretty far afield.
It was called something like Auto News or...
Auto Body News.
Auto Body News, right. Okay. Right.
So it started growing, and I got more and more advertisers, so that meant I could make it even thicker and nicer. And I used color and all those things that you do.
But you were still a one-man shop at that point?
Still.
That's pretty amazing.
And the slick cover. Now the pages inside weren't slick, but they were okay. They weren't that cheap.
Right. No. Yeah. I remember what it looked like. It was your standard sort of magazine style back then. So how did the opportunity come about to buy that? Did somebody approach you?
Because the woman who owned it, she actually hired me a couple of months to edit it.
Right.
And then she decided she wanted to sell it. Because she was coming back home to Phoenix.
Okay.
So she told me what she wanted. I could have got it for a lot less, but it seemed fair at the time. So I bought it from her. And it kept expanding. And then there was a publication over here.
Here in Phoenix.
Yes. It was like a newspaper, and I'll think of it, the tradesman.
Automotive tradesman.
So the guy I knew over here wanted to sell it, and his price was right, so I bought it, and now I've got two publications.
And you're still a one-man shop.
Still.
And what happened to the original newsletter that you started with, did you kind of fold that into Auto Body News?
With putting this state publication, first of all, I didn't have time anymore.
Right.
So one by one, I would drop them. I'd tell them, look, I've got your mailing list. I'll send you this instead of yours.
Right.
And they bought into it. Because it was the same thing, but it was more news.
Right.
More industry news. Okay, so now I did hire some people in Newport Beach, and then because it was a different publication in Scottsdale, a couple of people over here. And that's about the time that Mary Lynn decided she wanted to move back.
Well, no, wait a minute. We're skipping something important. When a robot came into your life.
Oh, that was much earlier. Lord, that goes... Oh, good heavens, Michael, you would remind me of that.
I mean, you were doing that at the same time.
I was doing that at the same time.
That's right. Yeah, so yeah. Probot. Well, tell us about Probot. I'm thinking Probot first appeared probably about 1982, maybe 83.
Yes, right about 82.
Yeah.
Well, what had happened there was, I don't remember why, but I... went out to the opening of some new properties out toward Indio, but nowhere near toward Palm Springs.
Right.
And for the life of me, I can't tell you. Yes, I can. I was before that. I picked up a client at a private school who wanted a flyer, brochure, family, whatever.
Okay, so this is when you were still doing the automotive, the regional flyers, mm-hmm. and occasional little side yeah. jobs.
Yeah. So I had a little more time because I only had one publication per month instead of eight.
Right.
Anyway, I picked up this client, and that what he wanted was monthly newsletter, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was up in, what city? Might have been Anaheim, but it was up in that part of Orange County.
Yeah.
So I was doing that for him, but there was, I had time enough to do that in my newsletter. So one day, aha, he decided to hire a robot for whatever purpose. And I was there the day the robot was there.
So explain, because what a robot, what passed for a robot in 1982, it might be a little different than what we consider to be a robot now.
This was earlier. This was probably 81.
Okay, all right.
And the robots were remote controlled.
Mm-hmm.
This one that, can't think of his name, that he had was about 4 feet 5 inches, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't it something like Robbie?
Something like what?
Robbie Robot? Or
no, that wasn't his name.
Okay.
Anyway, so I told the owner, I said, that's fascinating. I'd love to learn how to run one.
Well, so describe for us what you saw the robot doing.
They were making a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy who owned this company, school,
mm-hmm.
wanted a robot in the commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So he hired this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an older gentleman, and I'll think of his name, for a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
For his school.
Right.
So that's what he hired this robot for. Well, I'd never seen a robot before.
And it was a machine that was being controlled by a human operator, and it would come
yes.
on, and the arms would
from
move.
From a distance.
And he would talk, and the voice would seem to come out of the robot, and maybe the lights,
yep.
his eyes would flash. And
but it was a robotic voice.
Right.
Hello, my name is Peter. What's Peter?
Peter Robot.
My name is Peter. I am a robot. I will do what you tell me to do, that sort of thing.
Right. And if he was really good, people didn't know there was a human operator. Right.
So he would go up. The old man had two different models, Peter and the second one, almost identical. And that's because he had had two sons.
Mm.
So he gave them their names.
Mm.
He had to leave them behind in Australia.
The sons.
The two sons, yeah.
Right. But wait, I'm sorry, there's a story here. He had to leave his two sons behind in Australia, but he could bring his robots with him.
No. He designed the robots after he got here.
Okay. I see. To fill the hole in his heart.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
And one he was particularly fond of, and he wouldn't let anybody run it except himself.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he taught me how to run it,
mm-hmm.
and I picked up on it pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
So then I went with him for...
So you'd have like a palm-sized control in one hand, and then a microphone was like disguised as a pipe or something. And
originally a microphone buried in the stem of the pipe.
Right. So you could be on the other side of this room controlling this robot, and the idea was make the robot so realistic and so responsive to people that they would stop looking for a human operator. And
particularly
just
when I turned on the spinning bow tie.
I remember the spinning bow tie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't bend. He was straight up. His arms would go up and down.
Mm-hmm.
His head would turn 360 degrees.
Really? All the way around?
All the way around. The bow tie would spin.
Mm-hmm.
And lights would flash all over the place. It was gaudy.
Yeah.
It was really gaudy.
Yeah.
It was also, based on later ones, very primitive. But, you know, very few people had ever seen a robot before.
Right.
So it looked amazing to almost everybody. John, that was his first name.
That was the robot's first name? Or the
Peter and what was the other one? Peter Robot. I'll think of it.
Okay.
So I did this show for him. Well, he had both robots there. He ran his and I ran the other one. Didn't pay me anything, but because it was a learning experience.
You were a robot apprentice.
But I was learning very fast how to not only make it operate, but how to make it entertaining.
Right. And at the time, did you see this as a business opportunity, or were you really just doing it because it was fun?
Yeah, not immediately. So finally, after I did, I don't know, three or four, I went to John and I said, John, I'm pretty good, as you can see.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should pay me. So he agreed to pay me $100 a show. Now, he was probably getting $500 for each robot.
Right. But he had the maintenance and the overhead. And
he did. And the robots belonged to him.
Yeah.
And he should have gotten more. I think $100 wasn't enough, but I accepted it. And I worked with John for about a year. And then I asked for a raise because I was really good by this time at personality. I mean, I gave a personality to the robot I was running.
Mm-hmm.
And John got a lot of repeat business because this robot had this great personality.
Okay, now I'm gonna stop and ask you something here. You're an excellent public speaker. There's always an air of theatricality around you, some of which I may have inherited myself. Were you previously a frustrated actor, and this kind of gave you an opportunity to?
No. Never wanted to be, not even one play in high school. That was it. No, it's just, it came natural to me.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a ham in me.
Yeah.
And I just had a pattern that worked.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked for John for a year. In the meantime, I met another robot owner who wanted me to go to work for him.
You you met another robot owner?
Owner at a different show. And he had come over and watched what I did.
And liked what he saw.
And he liked what he saw. So he approached me and I had this misplaced sense of loyalty. I said, I can't. I'm pledged to John. He said, well, if you ever change your mind, here's how to reach me.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked John for a raise from 100 to 125.
Really? That's all? That seems very reasonable.
That's very reasonable. And John said, nope, I don't pay anybody more than $100. Well, that was a little disappointing because I felt I was really worth a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I settled for 125 because I didn't want to hit him too hard all at once.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, he said no. So I went to this other guy, and I said, I'm ready to go with you.
How much?
Started with 125.
Right.
And I never did another show with John again, ever.
Mm.
So I started 125 with this other fellow. Now, he was much more of an entrepreneur than John was. And we did a lot of big shows. His robot was completely different.
Mm-hmm.
He had two of them. And they were completely different from John's. They were much more modern.
Mm-hmm. And articulate.
Much more articulate. And just better all the way around. And better built. So I worked for him for about a year, and a lot of shows.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, after a year, I asked for a raise to 150.
Mm-hmm.
He said, nope, I don't pay anybody more than 125. So that did it. And I said, I'm in the wrong end of this, because I had learned by now how much money these owners were getting for their robots.
Right.
It was $500 and $600 and more a day.
Right.
plus all expenses. So I decided I'm in the wrong end of the business. And I had saved not enough money to buy one holder, $25,000.
Mm.
That's what ProBot cost.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd saved enough that I got a loan, and I had ProBot built. And because I had all these contacts that I'd made with John's clients and this other guy's clients, I had pictures sent to him showing them ProBot and explaining, you know, rang his bell very loudly, and they had remembered what a good job I did.
Mm-hmm.
So I started, I lined up several clients before ProBot was delivered.
So you're essentially starting a second business here as your other publication business is taking off.
Yeah, sort of. But it was so much fun running the robots. Just really fun. So I rented a, down the industrial area of Huntington Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a shop for the robots, but I also had a portion of it set aside for the publications.
Right.
So I started, and I had a couple people working for me, one to repair the robots and the other to help me find business.
Mm-hmm.
And we did pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
We did pretty good. I was making, I'm not going to say hand over fist, but I was making good money by this time.
So now, when, which one of these robots appeared in Short Circuit? It was Short Circuit 2.
Short Circuit, ProBot.
ProBot was in Short, was in Short Circuit or Short Circuit 2?
Yeah, Short Circuit.
Okay.
And
there
he
was a
also
movie with,
appeared in Revenge of the Nerds, Part 1.
Okay.
So anyway, somebody discovered me. It was actually Alan Funt.
Right.
Alan Funt discovered me.
The candy camera guy.
Yes. Because one day he called me at home in the morning.
Wait a minute. You got a cold call from Alan Funt?
From Alan Funt.
So I have to ask. When you pick up the phone and he said, "This is Alan Funt," did you start looking for a camera?
I recognize his voice.
Sure. Sure. For those of us growing up watching TV in the 60s and 70s, I think Candy Cameron maybe even started in the late 50s, a regular show where he would do pranks on people and the camera would be set up, and then it would be revealed that it was a prank. And yeah, he hosted these shows himself. He was a very familiar figure.
So anyway, it was we were living in this big 800-unit apartment complex.
Mm-hmm.
And the phone rings, and I pick it up, and he says, "This is Alan Funt." "Yeah, you are, because I recognize your voice."
Mm-hmm.
And somebody, Floyd and Ruby, were visiting us.
And Marilyn's parents.
And Marilyn's parents. And somebody asked me, "Who is it?" And I said, "It's Alan Funt." And they all, "It's Alan Funt. Alan Funt is calling Joe." And so what he had in mind was candid camera, but it was a one-day shoot. Would take all day long,
because
they had to do, actually they did different people, but the basic thing was the same. Okay, so I agreed to go up to West Hollywood and do the show.
Mm-hmm.
So Robbie and I went up early one morning.
Robbie, your stepson.
Yes. And got there in the hotel. Hotel Le Bellage. Bellage.
Bellage, okay.
Yes. Good day.
Mm-hmm.
Or good age, whatever. And we found Funt. And everything was filmed within the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So finally, toward the end, he said, "What do you want to be paid?" I said, "Mr. Funt, what do you think is fair?" Well, he gave me a signed blank check.
Whoa.
And I suppose I could have hit him for $1,000. I didn't. $600.
$600 for the day.
Yeah, because that was pretty much the going rate then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No problem. No problem. So we did the day, and I thanked him and said goodbye. And about a week later, an agent for Lucille Balls.
Okay, I definitely want to get that story, but you have to tell us what the scenario was with
in front?
The candid camera scenario, what they were doing with the robot.
It was, if this was actually for candid camera.
Right.
Okay. And what the deal was, men were sent up, specifically men.
Yes.
Were sent up from an employment agency and told that all they were going to do was sit at a desk and take phone calls for this big movie mogul who was out in West Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And he's expecting some calls. And all they had to do was write down the name of the person, the phone number, and then later in the day that we would pick it up from him and give it to the movie mogul, and he'd call him back. That was it. But shortly after that started, then the robot would come in. Alan Funt and I were in the next room.
Like watching through a one-way mirror or something?
No.
Close-circuit TV?
Close-circuit TV.
Right.
And I would... we practiced before anybody showed up.
Sure.
And it was no problem. I could maneuver the robot in place,
mm-hmm.
go up to the guy, and just chat with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
And so this is, obviously, had to do a bit of improv here, and it was different each time. But what sort of things did the Probot chat with them about?
Yep. And then a 21-year-old woman, I found out,
mm-hmm.
body that wouldn't stop. Cute, but the body was just okay. So we would be in there talking to him, and she would walk in,
mm-hmm.
and talk to the guy and basically disrobe and try to tempt him.
Mm-hmm.
And the very first one we had was the guy said, "Well, thank you, miss, but I'm gay." Alan Funt said, "Oh, no.
Oh, no. What were the odds of finding a gay man in West Hollywood?"
Yeah, what were they? So he says to me, "Let's follow through anyway."
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy was funny,
mm-hmm.
but he was gay.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl, after a while, put clothes back on and left.
Mm-hmm.
So then the robot talked to him about, well, what did he think of the girl? And he said, "She was all right. I'm not interested." And then there were eight altogether.
Like right.
One an hour. And they ran the game. There was another gay guy.
Two out of eight. And that seems just about right.
And Alan told him, you know, we're filming this thing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that? He said, "I don't care."
Mm-hmm.
But you're coming out of the closet. So what?
Okay.
Okay.
Really, who's going to see candid camera?
And who's going to look at him when there's a naked girl?
Right.
Okay. So we kept getting different characters.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
Until finally we found the one who was just perfect. Oh, before that, there was one guy who reached across the table,
mm-hmm.
trying to put his hands on her boobs. And that was...
He was trying to cover them up, a gentlemanly
yes,
thing to do.
Right.
Yes, of course.
That was one of the ones we saved, and I presume he used later on. He probably used three out of the eight.
Mm-hmm.
One guy was just perfect. He interacted with the girl. He was very funny. Joked with her. And the robot is trying to talk to her. "I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to her." So Funt is grinning from one side to the other because that's exactly the kind of thing he was looking for.
Right.
So we did eight of them, and I think he probably used three that fit very nicely. Oh, excuse me. And that was the end of that. But that also gave me exposure to West Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
where a lot of creative people live.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got contacted, probably they contracted Alan. I said, where did you find this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, it was my robot.
Right.
So he gave him my phone number. Now I started getting calls. Lucy.
Yep. Lucy Ball, Lucille Ball had was trying to, she had had a, she'd been out of the limelight for a while and then had done a TV movie. I'm feeling it's some backstory here. Had done a TV movie where she played a homeless woman, and it was very well received. And suddenly she was something of a commodity again. So they launched yet another Lucille Ball.
Right, Life with Lucy.
Life with Lucy, that's right. With the same writers.
Yes.
Madeline Carroll.
Yes.
And,
she'd had them for...
Right, since her I Love Lucy days.
Right.
Yeah.
So the guy told me to come by, which I did, to the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucy chatted with me.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing she did was make certain that I understood that she was in charge.
Mm.
Well, hell, you're Lucy. You walk on water.
Of course.
Of course you're in charge. I had no problem with that at all. Some of the other staff were worried that I might resent it now.
Or that your robot might try to upstage her?
Yeah, something like that.
Nobody could upstage Lucy.
No, no, she was too good.
Yeah.
So the first role was a really easy one.
Mm-hmm.
The Probot was, let's see. She was running a hardware store with, remember the banker?
Right, Mr. Mooney.
Mr. Mooney.
I forget the actor's name. Yeah. Remember, I was on the set with you. You had invited me to join
That's
you.
That's right. And yeah. You got your picture taken.
I did not. I kick myself that I didn't get my picture taken with Lucy. How dumb was that? But I was trying to be, you know, I lived in L.A. I worked in the film business. You don't get gaga over stars. So I was trying to be cool about it. I could kick myself in the head that I did not get my picture taken with Lucy.
I did. I got
yes.
Her, the robot, and
mm-hmm,
me.
Mm-hmm.
And she personally signed it to Joe with love. Lucy.
Right. Right.
Okay. So the first role was simple as can be. It was toward the end of the show. And the robot was supposed to come in, go about 10 feet, lift up a package, and put it on the counter.
Right.
That was it. Plus, said a few things.
Yeah, and it went flawlessly.
Yeah. So we did it several times. It worked perfectly each time.
And this was being filmed in front of a live audience.
Well, it would finally, when they filmed it, yes.
Yes.
Which included Floyd and Ruby.
Right. That's right.
Hello, sweetie. So after the first practice rehearsal went well, she said, well, what else can it do?
Mm-hmm.
So I started showing her. He was pretty flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other things you can do. And she turned around and looked at Madeline and the others and nodded her head.
Mm-hmm. And they wrote a scene.
The next day.
Right.
Which was far more extensive than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it works perfectly. It works perfectly. So then she asked me some more. Well, can it do this or this? And said, well, that yet or this no. So she looked at Madeline and the other writers, and the role expanded. So to make a long story short, the role expanded to the point where the Probot chased Mr. Mooney around the stage
right
at the end of the program.
Right.
And that was a pretty good, pretty strong. That was the finish of the show.
Yeah, it was the bumper.
Yes. So we rehearsed that several times. It always did the same thing correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay, we're ready to shoot tomorrow before a live audience. And so I brought Floyd and Ruby and
that, and that's when I came in.
That's where you came in?
Okay. Right, yeah.
What were you doing there?
I was your assistant.
Okay.
We just gave you an opportunity to be on set, yeah.
So, well, you saw what happened. Probot chased Mr. Mooney around the stage,
mm-hmm.
and that was the end of it.
Right.
Okay. Well, everybody's gone, including you, I think. Maybe not. But I accidentally overheard Lucy telling someone, she said, well, this show was a bust, except for the robot.
Mm.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah.
So, well, I think once again, it's $600, because that was the going rate.
Sure.
All right.
You need to take a break?
What?
Do you want to take a break?
No.
Okay.
So, we did the show. Now, what I didn't know, it wasn't the first one in the series. It was the last one.
Was it the last one in the series?
The last one in the series.
It was unfortunately a short-lived series.
Yes, it was. There were 13 episodes.
Did they make it to 13?
They did.
Okay.
And Probot was in the 13th and
mm-hmm.
last one.
Okay.
And however, when that was broadcast, a lot of people saw it.
Mm-hmm.
So they contacted Lucy's agent.
Mm-hmm.
He gave him my phone number.
Right.
And now I started doing a whole bunch of, I mean, a real sitcoms. I worked with Angela Lansbury on an episode of Murder, She Wrote.
Wait a minute. Was Probot in an episode of Murder, She Wrote? I had completely forgotten that.
No, it wasn't Probot. It was a little short one, about that high.
Right.
It was voice controlled.
Right, okay.
I had, by this time, had three. I wound up finally with five.
You had five robots.
Five robots.
I'd forgotten
yeah.
that.
Including the voice controlled one. So we did all these different sitcoms. I mean, there were, I don't know, Michael, 7, 8 of them.
Hmm.
I can't even remember them all now because...
Mm-hmm.
They were kind of fast and furious.
Sure.
And I made a lot of money. And then, with the assistant I had, we started booking shows around the country at convention centers.
Right.
And we God, where do we go to? I remember we went to Chicago, Pittsburgh, Atlanta, St. Louis, Seattle, doing all these different shows.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of them led to repeats or somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And the business was just, wow, taking off. In the meantime, I was still doing the other.
Magazine.
Because between shows, I had nothing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's show business.
Yeah. So it's... What are we up to now?
So we're up to...
George H.W. Bush.
No, not yet. Well, we're getting there.
Because it was Reagan.
We're in the mid-80s still.
Well, there was a boom and then a bust.
Right.
And this one summer, where every year we'd start out here and go...
Up.
Up.
Yep.
This year... It started out here and started going down.
Yeah, yeah. So we're definitely talking second term of Reagan. So probably 86.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I thought, uh-oh, something's going on out there.
Yeah.
Long before anybody used the word recession.
Right.
I realized that something was going wrong.
Because you could see it.
I could see it.
I mean, your business was going down.
Yeah.
Right.
And they would tell me, well, Joe, business hasn't been that good. So we're going to skip this year.
Mm-hmm.
Call back next year.
Mm-hmm.
I had to skip next year, too. So I realized, okay, this is now my business is just failing because I wasn't getting near enough shows. I was reduced to doing birthday parties, bar mitzvahs.
Yeah.
But they were okay, too. I mean, I did a lot of them at... Started at 125 for an hour,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes booked 2 hours. one time on a bar mitzvah, I booked 2 hours, finished, getting ready to go, and the father said, "Oh, you can't go yet." I said, "Why not?" Since the kids aren't ready to see you go yet. And he said, "How much more?" And I thought, he wants me, 150. Uh-huh. Okay, no problem.
Huh.
And actually, I stayed 4 hours.
Oh.
So that was 300, 4, 5, 50 for one afternoon. That's good money.
Wasn't right around this time that Probot took a dive in a pool?
Yeah, my assistant did that.
Yeah.
But nothing was really injured. It was just got wet and blew some fuses and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Fortunately, nobody else was in the pool.
No, you know, no.
Yeah.
So we fished it out. Well, he fished it out and then brought it back to me and said we had a little accident. Oh. But when we took it apart, nothing was damaged.
Yeah.
Like I said, the battery may have been ruined, but I'm not certain.
And it used like a little, like a car battery in the base, right?
No, marine battery.
A marine battery for a boat.
Yeah, you don't want a car battery because a car battery gives all the power up front. A marine battery draws slowly, and that's what you want. You do not want a surge of power,
right?
Because then it goes down very quickly.
Interesting.
But you want power that is steady, and you can continue to draw.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we had. They were a little expensive, but they lasted such a long, long time.
Right.
So I did, like I said, a lot of wedding receptions, birthdays, bar mitzvahs, that sort of thing, and made enough money to keep the business afloat. But even I could read the handwriting on the wall that wasn't going to sustain me for a long time.
Right.
Because they needed so many of these shows to get enough income to pay the rent at this place. I was paying $2,000 a month.
Mm.
And my expenses were not terribly high, but high enough that I had to bring in $3,500. In order just to break even.
Mm.
So I realized, ain't gonna happen. So I closed the place, put everything in storage, and concentrated on the magazine.
But I'm trying to put this in the timeline now, because I moved away from California in 87, and I think that business was still going at the time. Yeah. So sometime after that, or early 90s, maybe it was
late 80s, I believe.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so I switched over to doing the publication because I could do it at home.
Right.
And I had very few expenses other than the printing and the mailing were my big expense. And I had a printer do the printing and a mailing house do the mailing.
Mm-hmm.
And all I had to do at that point was to bill my clients and collect the money and pay my bills. So my total income was reduced, but my time to do it was increased, so I spent as much time as I could making it better. All right, then about this time, I was offered a chance to buy the publication over here, Automotive Tradesman.
Right.
So I came over and checked it out, and it made sense. The price was right, and I could handle both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to open an office in Scottsdale and have the mailings from there. I mean, took them to the mailing house, and I still had the other one over in Newport Beach with a different staff. And that's about the time that Mary Lynn decided that. Oh, I've got to shift.